Hey, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We're online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. This is the time in the show where we welcome our friends, our producers, our editor, anyone else really who wants to be on the show.
Exactly. Into the studio.
Doorman from downstairs.
To talk about what you all have been emailing to your friends, talking about, and passing along on the interwebs. We call it the most. Dan Pashman, what do you got?
Hey, guys. How are you? We got a most emailed here from the New York Times arts section. Researchers play tune recorded before Edison. Huh? Until now, Thomas Edison was credited as the first guy ever to record sound in a way that it could be played back. But they appear to have found an audio recording made 17 years before Edison received a patent for the phonograph and 28 years before an Edison associate captured a snippet of a Handel oratorio. And we actually have the audio of this. It's posted up on the Times website. And this is, we need to turn down the background music because it's not exactly the purtiest audio recording you ever heard.
Okay.
But this is, it comes from France. It's in Paris. And it is a folk singer, a singer singing the song Au Clair de la Lune.
Clear moon.
The light of the moon.
Light of the moon, yeah.
And let's see how it sounds.
Sounds old.
Sounds kind of like the recording.
Catchy.
Yeah. I can't get that out of my head. But it's pretty interesting. This was recorded on a phone autograph, which is a precursor to the phonograph. It was a machine designed to record sounds visually, not to play them back. This is the part of the article I found most amazing, is that the recordings were not intended for listening because the idea of audio playback had not been conceived.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, this was so long ago that the idea that you could record sound and play it back had not been conceived.
They just wanted to capture it. Just cause, and never
in visual form, and then yes. So they took basically a writing of music of sound, and these scientists today figured out how to use a stylus and various technology to extract sound off this paper.
It just makes you wonder what we haven't thought of yet that we're going to be doing later.
Mm-hmm. Right? What can't we conceive of now?
Lots of
so
things.
Many things. My most is most popular at CNN. The inventor of the Egg McMuffin has died at 89 years old. His name is Herb Peterson. And apparently Herb was very partial to Eggs Benedict and wanted to create something like that for McDonald's. He'd been with the company for...
Kind of like it.
Hey, can anybody actually name what's in an Egg McMuffin?
A Canadian bacon, fried egg, English muffins, cheese.
Jeez. Close. I'll give you the exact description. The egg sandwich consisted of an egg that had been formed in a Teflon circle with the yolk broken, topped with a slice of cheese, and grilled Canadian bacon. It was served and open face on a toasted and buttered English muffin.
It's so funny to think about somebody.
Excuse me, I gotta go get one.
It's so funny to think about somebody inventing that.
Yes.
Like, I think of it just as an essence, like the circle.
It has always been. Like the wheel. It just has. He also had McDonald's first national advertising slogan. He created it, where quality starts fresh every day. So rest in peace, Herb Peterson.
Okay, my most is about a notorious bear from Europe. This guy kind of haunted my dreams for a while when I was living in Germany because he was all over the headlines.
What?
Bruno was his name. And Bruno was part of this program that was started by the Italians to bring back bears to the Alps. They had kind of become endangered in that area. So they put him down near Austria and Germany. And he just started wreaking all kinds of havoc. He was only 2 years old. You know, he's like an adolescent. He's like a teenager. And he was just getting into all kinds of trouble. He's roaming villages and taunting farmers, breaking into beehives, eating sheep. And there was this big manhunt for him. I mean,
that
really.
Just like my adolescence.
That's not funny to the sheep.
I mean, it's not funny. That's not funny. But
that's bad.
He was all over the headlines.
Yeah, you did.
He was all over the headlines for a long time. They eventually shot him. It was really sad when it happened. Everyone was...
Oh, this is taking a terrible
was
turn.
Really upset. Wow. But now he has been honored and made into a stuffed... it's not actually him. A replica of Bruno has been made and put up in a Munich museum so people can go and pay homage. There you go.
All right. Ian, I think we have a little bit of time.
Okay.
It fast.
Mine's a little complicated, but I'll try and make it quick. This is the most popular from National Geographic News. There's a provision in the Endangered Species Act that allows the government to classify groups of a species into what are called distinct population segments. And it's meant to preserve parts of species, certain populations in areas that are markedly different from the rest of their species, either physical differences, behavioral factors, geographical differences. And it's meant to kind of allow for special protections of those separate parts of the species. And there's kind of a battle brewing between conservationists and the government. Conservationists are saying that the government's actually misusing this provision. And what they're doing is separating out certain populations of endangered species and saying, well, this part of, say there's a wolf, and there's a wolf that's endangered, and a third of the wolf population is in a forest somewhere. And that part of the population is doing really well. So they separate that out, call that a distinct part of the species, and they say, we don't have to protect this anymore. And the conservationists are saying they're misusing this separation. All right, you guys.
I'm thinking that Ian needs to go on a trip with the slow traveler.
Yeah.
To explain that story.
Well, actually, this is a really interesting story.
It's a good
that we
story.
Want to break out.
Good.
We actually want to talk more about.
I'm turning off my mic.
Yeah. Sorry. What do you think, Matt? Do we have time for Caitlin?
We have time for Caitlin.
Caitlin, go for it.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I have
most
emailed at USA Today. It's about Petra the swan, who's going to be reunited with her beloved swan-shaped paddle boat. Yes, Petra, a real black swan, has become so attached to the paddle boat that when they moved her to the zoo, they had to move the paddle boat with her. But apparently they decided they wanted her to get a real mate, so they tried to settle her down with a black swan. They didn't get along. He left, sought off other women, so now they're putting her back to the lake so she can be reunited with her beloved paddle
It's
boat.
Like Lars in the Real
World. And I just have to give a shout out to Summer Ash, who tipped us off about this story a little while ago.
Aww.
So thanks, Summer.
And finally, Trisha McKinney. Well, not finally. Matt's last, but Trisha, you've got a good one.
Yeah, I checked out the Google Trends this morning, and there was something called cheesing on it, and I was like, what is that? And I clicked on it, and you know how you click on it, and it tells you the related searches? And they were things like cat urine, high, huffing cat urine, and I thought, all right, what's this? And the searches spiked at about 10 p.m. Eastern, which is when South Park was on the air last night. They had a new episode of South Park. And let's find out what cheesing is.
You can't get high off of cat urine, can you?
Well, it's not actually cat urine, but male cats, when they're marking their territory, spray a concentrated urine to fend off other male cats, and that can get you really high. Okay, really, really high. Okay. Probably shouldn't have told you that just now. Okay. That was probably bad.
Thanks, Mr. Mackey. So, you know, of course the kids go off and try to get high in this method, but it actually is a satire of the news media kind of making much of the new drugs what the kids are into these days. So anyway, I guess people went out to see if cheesing was real. I don't think it's real.
Yeah, and I have to say that it brings me to my most emailed story from NPR.org. It's number 2 right now. I'm not kidding. Cheese heroin hooking young users in Dallas. This is serious. This is really serious.
That was real.
It's not South Park. Those stories like this provide plenty of inspiration for the South Park guys. And it is indeed a type of heroin called cheese. And people are snorting it. And the people who are snorting it are young kids, mostly young Hispanics. And when I say young, I mean like 9 years old. And so some drug abuse experts are calling it a mini epidemic. NPR's John Burnett did this story, and here's his report on that from Dallas.
Cheese heroin is Mexican black tar heroin diluted with over-the-counter sleep medications such as Tylenol PM. Sniffing heroin is not particularly new, but addiction experts say this outbreak in Dallas is unprecedented. Typically, people who inhale heroin are older and they're white. In Dallas, however, users are mostly Latino and they're young. Really young.
The reports that we were seeing were pretty striking. Kids as young as 9 or 10 years of age coming to the hospital emergency rooms or detox facilities in acute heroin withdrawal.
Dr. Carlos Tirado is a psychiatry professor and medical director of a drug treatment center in Dallas. He says substance abuse clinics began seeing younger and younger cheese heroin addicts.
We really didn't know what to do with a 9-year-old in opiate withdrawal, what the treatment ramifications of that are. Do you send a 9-year-old to an AA meeting? What do you do with a 9-year-old in terms of keeping them sober once they've developed this problem with chronic drug use?
A more typical user is 17-year-old Lisbeth. She's the daughter of immigrants from Juarez, Mexico, who moved to Dallas to get away from the border's violent drug culture. She attends a public school in North Dallas that has a large Hispanic population, within which, she says, sniffing cheese is commonplace. Wearing a gray hoodie and hoop earrings, she sits on a couch at Phoenix House, a residential treatment center in Dallas. Lisbeth says she started snorting heroin at 14.
I thought that since it was like used as sniffing, I would like try to deny, you know, and now this is just cheese or whatever. It's not as bad as shooting it up.
She says she entered treatment, now for the second time, because she came to hate withdrawal symptoms.
I was tired to feeling like my bones started hurting. I was tired of my headaches, cold sweats and all that. So I told my mom to bring me, because I'm already going to be 18 and I don't want to look at myself like being a junkie, you know, like some people I see in the streets, and I don't want to be like them. I want to have a better life.
No one had ever heard of cheese heroin anywhere in the nation before the first case was discovered in Thomas Jefferson High School in August 2005. Since then, Detective Jeremy Libby with the Dallas Independent School District Police Department has arrested and interviewed more than 300 users. Libby learned that cheese is only $1 or $2 a line, cheap enough for a middle schooler's lunch budget. And because cheese heroin is low grade, only 1 to 3% pure heroin, it wears off quickly. Withdrawal sets in, and heavy users require frequent hits.
They say, you know, I'll wake up in the morning and I'm already hurting, so I use some cheese. If I don't use during second period, withdrawal will kick in by third period, then lunch, then sixth period, then immediately after school, then after dinner, then before bed. And the ones that are really bad off are winding up being woken up in the middle of the night by withdrawal sickness.
Though there's some data that heroin inhaling is growing more popular among young Hispanics in a handful of other Texas cities, it's too early to call it a trend. Still, Robert Lubrin, an official at the Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, says they're closely watching the situation in Dallas.
The concern is that the people who market these drugs are very savvy, and if there's a profit to be made by moving to another community, we know they'll do that. This is a product that is easily transportable, it is low cost, and it is highly addictive.
In Dallas, things have improved in the past 2.5 years. The county medical examiner reported 8 overdose deaths from cheese heroin alone or in combination with other drugs, but there has not been a death since last July. Police arrests of heroin dealers in schools and neighborhoods are up. Dallas County formed a cheese heroin task force. And there's now an aggressive education program in the schools, which includes this video.
This is a very, very serious thing.
But we need to talk about it, or it will only get worse.
And more of our friends will die. People who are snorting cheese are risking their lives.
Cheese heroin is not as prevalent in the schools as it once was, but parents say it's still rampant in Hispanic immigrant neighborhoods. Directors of local drug treatment centers report steady admissions of young addicts, said the school district detective. This is not a problem we can arrest our way out of.
That was NPR's John Burnett reporting. You can link to all the stories you heard on The Most today by going to our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.